Welcome to the New Abbey Podcast. We are a Jesus community telling the biggest story of God in Los Angeles. We're excited that you're joining the conversation with us today. Enjoy.
So you're going to grab three or four people around you. What was the hardest you laughed this week and why? So enjoy. A couple nights ago, I was on TikTok, and it was just, like, hitting. Like, you know when you're just like, you know me. Like, every single video was like, fire, fire, fire. I was in tears. But then, and I hope this happened in some of the groups, because this is my favorite thing ever, something, like, happens. It's so funny. It's like, bring me to tears, and I explain it to my wife. Like, she doesn't see the video. I'm retelling now the video, and she's just like, it's not. And I'm like crying. I'm like, this is so funny. And she's like, oh, yeah. I'm like, what? This is hilarious. Okay, so anyways, it's Palm Sunday, and I'm really excited about that. So we're pausing on our Exodus journey, and we're going to get into Palm Sunday. Next week is Easter. These are just some stories in church that we have heard again and again, and for good reason, because there's a lot of beauty in them. And so this morning we find ourselves in the book of Luke, and the passage goes like this. Then God rode in, Jesus came on a donkey, and he said, hey, if anyone asks you where you got this, oh, okay. After Jesus had said this, he went on ahead, going up to Jerusalem. As he approached Bethphage and Bethany at the hill called Mount of Olives, he sent two of his disciples, saying to them, go to the village ahead of you, and as you enter it, you will find a colt tied there, which no one has ever ridden. Untie it and bring it here. If anyone asks you, why are you untying it, say, the Lord needs it. And duh. Those who were sent ahead went and found it just as he had told them. As they were untying it, its owner said, why are you untying the colt? And they're like, we are prepared for this. They replied, the Lord needs it. Classic. They brought it to Jesus, threw their cloaks on the colt, and put Jesus on it. As they went along, people spread their cloaks on the road. When he came near the place where the road goes down, the Mount of Olives, the whole crowd of disciples began joyfully to praise God in loud voices for all of the miracles they had seen. Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord, peace in heaven and glory in the highest. So this is the story. This is a story leading up to the Easter story. This is a story that we tell at the beginning of what we call Holy Week. This is the story. Jesus is coming in to Jerusalem, and everyone's cheering, and they've got palm leaves, and they're so excited, and they're praising this person, this Savior, this Jesus. And we all know where it's going to next week, right? These things happen chronologically on Sundays, these events, so that's why we do that. Just kidding. But he's going to the cross. But he's been on this whole journey, right? And he's done all these things. And for me, Palm Sunday is a classic story of what we thought we wanted versus what we needed versus what we got, right? This is a story not about someone doing all these miraculous things, and so that's why they are celebrating. It's a story about turning everything on its head. It's about taking the narrative that you saw, the narrative you were told, the things you believed about power, about triumph, and turning it all upside down, and that is a beautiful story. Let me tell you guys real quick why this isn't the sole reason that my wife and I don't want children. This is a part of it because I'm afraid they'll be like me. So I was insufferable as a kid. Can you imagine? This is how much I like to talk now. I talk all the time. I could talk to a tree. I could talk to a pole, a person, a dog. My dog sometimes gets up, walks out of the room. I live to talk. You think I think I'm funny now? You should have imagined how funny I thought when I was 12 and I wasn't. Okay, so when I was like 12 years old, I saw this movie and this lady had a pet iguana. And the iguana had like a leather jacket, like harness, and they were best friends. And so I just had a narrative in my mind that to be the person I needed to be, I needed an iguana. I needed an iguana, and it needed to have a leather jacket. Like, I just was so sold on that narrative. And I became obsessed, right? And when I become obsessed, like, you can't escape it. And my parents, I was like, hey, can I get an iguana? They were like, absolutely not. We're barely dog people. Like, our dog lived outside. Like, we had a dog, but it didn't even, you know. So they're like, we're not lizard people. And so I was like, challenge accepted. I got to find a way that my life won't be complete. Who I am will not be significant without this iguana. So I just, like, went for it. I mean, I was so... Every conversation I turned into iguana talk somehow. I got books from school, from the library, about iguanas. I, like, photocopied the pages in the school library, and I put them in my dad's briefcase every day. Every single day, my dad would get to work, open it up, and be so mad there's iguana facts in his briefcase. Hand-drawn pictures of iguanas in my mom's purse, under their pillows, like in their bedroom. I would hide them. I don't know what I thought. I would do all this research. We'd be at the dinner table, my poor sister, because every night at the dinner table, iguana talk. Like, I wouldn't stop. They couldn't stop me. And so finally, they caved. And I was shocked. I'm so happy. Yes, thank you. It works, okay? And we go to the pet store. I find out all the things we need, and my dad's kind of like, he's not joyfully taking me. He's like, fine, you know. So we go to the pet store, and there in the pet store is the first time I realized, like, I've actually never seen an iguana in person. And I was a little caught off guard with the way they really look. And so I get this iguana. My dad finds, this was very sweet of him, he found a little leather, like, iguana, like, harness, like, leash thing, so I could, like, take him out. His name was Howard. I named him Howard. And so Howard's in my room, and night one, I'm like, I'm really scared of. I had, like, nightmares. I was like, he's watching me, like, open his thing to feed him. He's going to learn how to open it. He's going to be on my face. Like, the more I looked at him, the more I was like, he's so scary. Like, he's literally so scary. So I can't tell. I'm like, this is how I fed him. Like, just, I threw food in there. And my parents were like, oh, are you so happy? Do you love him? Like, I'm like, yeah. And I probably had him for, like, a week before they were like, oh, it's time to, like, clean his cage. And that's when I had to come clean of, like, I can't touch him. And I can't get him out to clean the cage because I'm, like, scared. I was, like, crying. I was like, he's so scary. And my parents were so, my dad made me go with him, with the cage, back to the pet store and tell the pet store person how much I begged my parents for this and how sorry I was and how scared I am of him, and we had to give him back, okay? And that's the story of Howard. And I never had any leverage to ask my parents for anything ever again. That was my one shot, and I really, really blew it. But that's what I thought I wanted. And when I got it, it was actually really scary. I think about this all the time. Sometimes the things we want, we get them, and it's actually kind of scary. And I think this a lot in terms of, like, culturally and socially, when we see people who are being oppressors, or we see people who are misusing power, we see people who are misusing their platforms, we see people doing bad things or things we don't like. Sometimes the things that we want are vengeance. The things that we want are retribution, retaliation, annihilation. And sometimes they happen, and it's actually really scary, and we realize that's not what we wanted. You know who did this really well? Did anyone watch Game of Thrones? Game of Thrones made you, like, hate a character so bad that you're like, I hope something bad happens. And then something so bad happens that you're like, well, I do not feel good about that. Why would you do that? Not that bad, just a little bad. And we live under this narrative of power and what we want and what we think we need, and then Jesus comes along and changes the whole thing, because what I think we need sometimes, and definitely when this was happening, what they thought they wanted was a God that's going to come down, fix everything, do everything theirself, just be all powerful, smack a hammer down and fix it. And instead what we got was Jesus, who invites us into a narrative that we have responsibility in too. What we got was not a God saying, all right, you follow these rules, I'm going to come down, I'm going to fix everything for you. What we got was someone who said, hey, I'm going to come and I'm going to live and I'm going to show you how to participate in a reality that turns these ideas on their head. That ideas of power that you thought you wanted, that these ideas that you have consumed about who God is and what God is supposed to do and what retribution looks like and what forgiveness looks like and what accountability, and what all these things, I'm turning it all on its head, and you are invited not only to watch me, but to live out that reality with me. And that's super different. This is happening. We are like palm fronds. We are waving this, and Jesus is on his way to the cross to be betrayed and then killed. And that's not to say, oh, we're all going to have to suffer in the name of Christ. That's to say how beautiful that this narrative isn't without suffering, because neither are our lives. And sometimes the things that we think can save us are not the things that are going to save us at all. And that's not me saying, hey, everyone, you have a God-sized hole in your heart, and Jesus is the only thing that can fix it. But that is me saying, I think we have consumed and ingested and believed ideas around power and what can save us and what triumph looks like, and I don't think they're helpful. I think they need to be turned on their head. And that's what Jesus came to do. Jesus rode in triumphant this day, not because everything was perfect, not because there was no more pain. Jesus rode in triumphant because he had succeeded in bringing a counter-narrative where he saw people as people. He saw the adulterer and the tax collector and the person with the things that he put in the pigs and all those people. He saw them. And the triumph comes not from, hey, I came down, I fixed everything, you'll all be good. Hey, I'm never going to suffer and neither are you. Hey, everything's perfect. Hey, I fixed it all. No, the triumph comes in, hey, there's a narrative out there around power, around people, around all these things, and I'm turning it on its head and I'm inviting you to do the same. See how it works? And this goes all the way to the cross. The cross of Jesus is one of the most radical things in this entire narrative, because it's not, oh, try to be perfect like me, and if you can't be perfect, then I'm gonna have to die, and then you can try, but you still won't make it, but it's fine because I did that, right? Which was a hard story to pick up on. But a beautiful story is, watch me confront these corrupt systems of power without taking any power for myself. Watch me experience violence without giving violence in return. Watch me do these things and confront these corrupt things without becoming corrupt. Watch me take on sin without putting it back on people. Watch me be betrayed without betraying someone. That is the narrative of Jesus on the cross. And that's mind-blowing. That changes everything about the way I see and understand power. Power doesn't look like a hammer. Power looks like a cross. Power doesn't look like fixing everything. Power looks like being with those who need help. Power and triumph isn't even in the miracles. It's in leveling the playing field. Do you ever think about this? Maybe God wasn't like, hey, watch me part the Red Sea because I can do it. We're not just using power to use power. It's, if I need to part the Red Sea, I'll do it because there are people who need to be free on the other side. Yeah. That's the point of miracles. We're not showing off power. We are leveling a playing field. We are freeing people. That's a much different narrative than I have about who God is and what God should do and what my responsibility is in it. Because now it's not like, come on. Do your thing. It's like, okay, how can we help people be free? How can I see humanity? How can I turn these narratives on our head? And as we go into Holy Week, the invitation is to think about that. People, when Jesus was alive, had consumed ideas about power and God and who God was supposed to be and what that was supposed to look like, because the empire fed them those narratives. And they had this idea. All the way until that's why they didn't want Jesus saying a counter-narrative, all these things. And it would be naive of us to not think that we too live in an empire that is feeding us ideas around power of who God is and what God should look like and who God's people are and all these things. And at some point, I think we may have ingested some of those, and to no fault of our own, these are the narratives we were given. So when I think about Holy Week sometimes, it's not as much of a sit in penance and think about this sacrifice that was made, although that's a part of it. There's a big part of it for me that goes into Holy Week thinking, where have I ingested these narratives and false ideas around power and who's powerful and what triumph is and leveling the playing field and who needs to be free and how to bring people freedom and vengeance and accountability, and how do I rewire some of those to turn them on their head, because that's the model that I have. That's the invitation that we get. We don't get a, hey, I'm going to do everything. I'm going to bring a hammer. Those are the other gods. This one says, no, 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 I'm showing you a different way to live out a counter-narrative in a world that is telling you different. We have so many narratives happening right now in our world. Some of them are hateful. Some of them are vengeful. Some of them are just downright ignorant. Some of them, and some of them have gotten into our minds and we are working them out in real time, and that's okay. But what if we saw Holy Week as a reminder, an opportunity to confront some of those? Those are the most miraculous things that Jesus did, right? And I know there are all these beautiful moments that we look at and blind, you know, healing the blind man and the man with the mat and all of these things. And all of those miracles are amazing, but the triumph in those comes from seeing people. The triumph in those comes from bringing freedom where freedom needs to be brought. The triumph comes from leveling the playing field. The triumph that Jesus is riding into on this day and people are shouting and laying down their cloaks isn't because you're all powerful and you fixed everything. It's because you saw people. And we are invited into an invitation to see people. And that includes ourselves. How does that change the story? I can't promise we're not headed to betrayal or to a cross. I can't promise everything's going to be okay. But what I want to do is do my very best to always bring that counter-narrative and turn it on its head. Of yes, I want to confront those systems. And though I may experience that suffering, I don't want to put it back on anyone else. And though I may experience that violence, I don't want to give violence in return. How can I shift this narrative? Sometimes our triumph may not look like capitalism and storing well for ourselves and being secure and finally feeling good. Sometimes our triumph is going to be in therapy. Our triumph may not come in being so self-sufficient and so independent that we don't need it. Our triumph may be being vulnerable in relationships. I don't know what it is, but there are narratives that we consume that we need to turn on their head. That is the invitation of this story. Writing in exactly the opposite of what you thought. Some of you were fed a narrative that your life would only be complete if you had an iguana wearing a leather jacket. It's not true. Maybe it is, though, for someone, and I would love to hear your experience with that. But the narrative that the only way we're going to fix racism in the U.S. is for white people to experience what we've experienced. And I don't think that's going to make us happy. Now, the only way to fix homophobia in the church is that, I don't know, but something bad, right? Everyone has to be gay or no one's gonna. Like, but the invitation is to say, I've experienced these things that didn't lead to freedom. What I'm going to do is I'm going to see people who are there. I'm going to do whatever I can. If it's calling a miracle, if it's bringing down the work of whatever I am going to show in power and triumph is going to be for people. For the healing, for the wholeness, for the freedom, and to see them, for them to be seen. And that's something that is a beautiful narrative. It's a narrative I'm taking in to this Holy Week as we pause and we remember and we reflect before we talk about all of the beauty that is Easter. Just like I planned it. So with that, you're going to grab the same three or four people around you, and answer this question. Where in your life do you want to redefine power? Enjoy.
Thanks for listening to the New Abbey podcast. For more information, visit us on the web at www.newabbey.org.